Mitzvah Shin Samech 360. Mitzvah's Meiser Behema Tehora Bechol Shana. The requirement to tithe ritually clean animals every year. Last are called Behemos Tehoros. You are required to tithe all clean animals every year. Doesn't say every year, that's what it said in the title. Shehein Bakar Vetzon Ve'izim. What are the only types of clean, behemoth actually, in the technical terminology of Chazal, in biblical Hebrew, there really isn't such a consistent distinction between a behemoth and a chaya, but in rabbinical Hebrew, a behemoth refers specifically to a domesticated animal, and a chaya refers to a wild animal. So there are only three species of kosher domesticated animals, bakar, tzon, and izim, which are cattle, sheep, and goats. There are no other species of kosher domesticated animals. The ones that are born in our flocks each year. What do you do with the tithed animals? You have to bring them to Jerusalem. And you have to eat it there. Barbecue. Huge barbecue. So a part, not really edible portions of the animal are offered on the altar, the blood and the fat. I mean, they're technically edible, they're just halachically inedible, you're not allowed to eat them. So those parts are burned on the altar. Shneamar, b'chol masar bakar vatzon kol asher yavor tachas hashavet ha'asiri yakodesh. That on all the tithing of cattle and sheep, and we'll see later that sheep includes goats in this context. So anything that passes under the staff, the tenth shall be holy to God. So the tenth that passes under the staff, we're going to discuss a little bit later what exactly that means, is holy. This is discussed in Maseches Bechoros, because the Bechor is also like a quasi-holy animal. It's a holy animal, but basically it's eaten by the owners. Ketzad Maser, how do you do it? Konsan Ladir. You take all the animals that have not yet been misered, that have not been tithed, into a corral. Those alahem pesach katan. And out of the corral, you make a small exit. Small. Kedei shelo yushnayim yecholim latzeis b'kacha, so that two animals cannot go out at once. Oh, there's only room for them to walk single file. Umamir imosehen mibachutz vehen goos. That you put the mother animals outside the corral, and the mothers moo, and the baby animals.
How do you know who is the mother?
All the mothers.
Yeah, all the mothers.
The big ones are the mothers. Yeah. The little ones are the babies.
We're talking about animals that are less than a year old.
Mother of a particular.
Few months old.
Yeah, right.
No, you put all the mothers outside, like they're going to pick up their kids from school. Uh-huh. And they're mooing.
And some of them aren't going to. Oh.
Well, no, it's not an immediate. No, it's not an immediate thing that they won't come home. But you.
So the fastest one gets the is the lucky one, right?
Depends on what number.
Lucky one. Maybe you want to shecht the first one. I mean, it's not going to have the kedusha of meiser, but you could shecht any one you want. There's no just the bechor is only.
Go ahead. We haven't finished this whole. Thing.
Right.
This
so thing the okay. So the mothers moo, and then the kedei sheyishmu atloim kolam. So the baby animals have to pass through this tiny exit one by one. And the idea being that the Torah says, Kol asher yavor tachas hashavet, that the animals have to pass of their own accord. If you go into the corral and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, Meiser. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, Meiser. That does not count. That would have no halachic effect whatsoever. It only counts when the animals walk of their own accord.
You don't actually have to stand.
So then they're not trade. I mean, that's one thing you can avoid, the staggering cow syndrome over.
Well, no, it's also they're old enough.
If they have to walk of their own accord, it means they're healthy enough.
I don't think
well, but they could still be a trifa, in theory.
Yeah. Right. Head cow disease, maybe. Now, you don't actually stand there with a staff. Over
you do, you do.
Oh, dear.
Umona osan basheva. You take a staff.
Wow.
And you count 1, 2, 3, as they're going out.
Do you have to shecht them?
We'll get there.
That's my line. Until you get to 10. Sokro besikra v'omer hareze maisa. The 10th one that comes out every 10 animals, so you have some red dye on the end of the stick, and then you mark it with a stick when you get to the 10th, and the ones that have the red on them are maisa. Those animals are the ones that are designated as the tithing of the animals.
Now, what if you have fewer than 10 animals, like a lot of, you know,
if you have fewer than 10, then there's no miser.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
Yeah, it only goes by the 10th. If you have 13,
for
so
each,
you only...
Each year. No, we're talking about, like,
right.
So the spring, when they're born, it's like, you know... The,
right,
like, yeah, okay.
Right. So if you have 13, then you also only give one. You don't have to give... It's not going to be necessarily an even 10th of all the animals. It's every 10 in this method of counting. And again, it doesn't mean that the other ones got off the hook. It just means you could check them in a different way. You don't have the restriction of having to take them to eat in Yerushalayim. Mishor sheha mitzvah shehakel baruchu bachar ba'am Yisrael v'chafetz leman tzidko lios kulam oske torosov yodishma. God wants all Jews to know the Torah well. V'chachmaso mishacham b'mitzvah zo leman yilmedu yikchu musar. This is how they're going to get trained. Ki odea elokim shiro b'nei adam nimshachim achar achomer. Hapachus b'shagam hu basar, that people, this is a line from last week's parsha, that people are more attracted to delicious meat than they are to learning Torah in general, unless they've really worked on themselves. That's why, you know, in all these events, in Jewish events, when you want to get people to come to an event, food, there's going to be free food. To get people to go, the way to a person here, in this case, it could be either gender, the way to a person's heart is through his or her stomach. So God wants people to come to Yerushalayim to learn Torah. So the way to get them to do that is you have certain animals that are required to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Below yidnu nafsham ba'amal haTorah v'iska tamid. So people, you know, are lazy and they don't want to learn all the time. Akein sibev bitvunaso v'naslem makom shiedu akol divrei Torah al kopanim. That's why God gave people the opportunity to go to Yerushalayim to eat this meat. And then, while they're there, so they're going to absorb some wisdom as well. Mm-hmm. So people, you know, want to dwell where their money is, their property is. So people know that they have to take a tenth of their animals every year to have a barbecue in Yerushalayim. They can't cook, they can't shech, they can't eat the animals anywhere else. So they might think, in addition, you know, either they have two options. Either they could go visit, you know, a couple times a year in order to eat the maaser there. Or it's much easier. They'll let them just live in Yerushalayim. Then there's basically no hardship at all.
They can find an apartment.
Right.
And have the money to
wait, so you can't, obviously, I'm guessing then, this is the, motive, this is the explanation, you can't redeem it. You can't, there's no
correct,
way out
there's no redemption of a miser. Right,
okay,
or Bechor.
Right.
Yeah, yep, there's no way out of it. So, people are going to say, forget all this, it's just a schlep all these times a year we have to go to Yerushalayim anyway, so God be'etzem wants people to live in Yerushalayim, all things being equal.
How can the whole country live in Yerushalayim?
The suburbs, the outside, the fields, no.
Practically speaking, how can the whole country live in Yerushalayim?
Well, they're trying now, pretty much, huh?
Who's going to do the farming? Who's going to...
Right, practically speaking, they can't, but all things being equal, again, obviously there will be people who have other business elsewhere and they can't live in Yerushalayim. But all things being equal, there should be a little bit of a push to live in Yerushalayim if at all.
I get that.
Everything else being equal. Sheshama Sanhedrin Yodei Daz Mevinei Mada. That's where the great scholars are nowadays also. There are plenty of great rabbis elsewhere, but there are a high concentration of Torah scholars in Yerushalayim. In the olden days, there was the Sanhedrin, of course, which was the bastion of Torah. Uchmoke nale l'sham meiser tuaseinu ba'arba shnei shmita. This is also why God wants us to take our meiser sheni there. We know 4 out of the 6 years of the Shemitah cycle, we have to do meiser sheni, that a tenth of our produce must be taken to Yerushalayim and eaten there. In that case, you do have the option of redeeming, but you still have to take the money and buy other food in Yerushalayim. So that you're going to have to get to Yerushalayim in order to eat these things. Also, when you have a tree, so the first 3 years of the tree, you're not allowed to eat the fruit of the tree at all. It's orla, and then the 4th year of the tree, then the fruit of the tree is basically like Maaser Sheni. It's called Netar Ravai. The fourth year of the tree's life, you also have to eat in Yerushalayim or redeem it. Al kopanim o yelech sham bal hamamon atzmo lilmod Torah o yishlach l'sham echa mibanav shilmad sham v'yanizon b'osam peros. So either the owner of the animal himself is going to go to Yerushalayim to eat the animal, or he's going to say to his son, he gives the example, say, here, I know, go take this animal. You know, it's yours. I can't be bothered to go to Yerushalayim now to eat this animal. I have to feed you anyway. Here, take this animal. Go shecht it in Yerushalayim. This is, I'm giving you the miser. I'm letting you eat it. And while you're there, I'm sending you to yeshiva. So you'll go learn in yeshiva in Yerushalayim. And since I have to send these things to Yerushalayim anyway, so I'm going to send it to you, and this is going to be your allowance.
Wait a second. So you can go ahead and take the tenth, you know, animal, and you can actually appoint somebody as your agent to go and eat it for you in Yerushalayim? How's that?
I mean, it's not an agent, because there's no chiyuv on you to eat it. If this is to be eaten, it has to be eaten in Yerushalayim.
Okay, so wait a second.
It's not kodesh. You could give it to anyone you want.
Okay. So in other words, then, you could have, say, let's say, agents, where basically say, okay, you know, whatever, I'll collect, you know, all of the, you know, everybody's, you know, masters, I'll take them all, and I'll guarantee they'll be shechted and eaten in Yerushalayim, and, you know.
You could, why would you do that? Here, you're giving it to your son, because you have to feed him anyway.
Right, okay.
Saying, why somebody say, here, just give it to me and I'll take care of it, well, what's in it for me?
Right, okay.
You're not allowed to sell it, as we're going
to
see.
Yeah, Yerushalayim anyway, so, you know, okay, you just have to, you know, schlep your...
Right, so here you're going to say, well, already somebody in your family, you know, is going to be eating this in Yerushalayim, so you might as well send them to yeshiva while we're at it.
Right. One person can eat a whole animal.
Well, it depends how long, over a course of a certain period of time.
But they didn't have freezers.
Well.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, they're small animals.
Well, they're small animals.
Right, and also very small. Yeah. That's also true.
Wouldn't it surprise me if just like nowadays, there are a lot of businesses that have 49 employees, and probably a lot of farms that have 9 cows.
But
nowadays, if we had, we'll see you later what the story is nowadays, but yeah, you put it in your freezer if it was too big to eat in one sitting. Yeah. And we talk kach. Yeah, if, what's it called? Head to tail eating? This
nose,
new movement.
Nose to tail, right.
Really?
Nose to tail eating, that there's this movement, because wasn't the case in the olden days, but in America, you know, there's certain cuts of the animal that people want, and the rest gets thrown out.
Right.
All these delicious parts of the animal, nobody even touches.
Hey,
lungs.
Liver. I remember having liver growing up.
Well, liver people still eat, but
kidneys. My mother used to make kidneys.
Kidneys.
I don't eat them anymore.
So what? Kidneys is a little bit of an issue with a chalev. You can eat kidneys, but...
brains is a little issue with mad cow disease, by the way. So.
Right, okay. But there are a lot of parts of the animal that are thrown out nowadays, so that's why...
Is that what they call awful? O-F-F-A-L. It doesn't mean garbage. It means the parts of the animal
made into dog food or something.
Right, so all of these things are thrown out. So in the olden days, they wouldn't... even a small animal had a lot of food in it. Also, they did... Nowadays, we don't do... so much nikor that the hindquarters of the animal have that's where the chalev is, the forbidden fats, and the gid hanoshe. So since the most generally the hardest part of the animal to remove the forbidden parts from is the hindquarters. So nowadays in America, you know, chuck it.
Well, they don't throw it out.
They sell it as tripe. They don't throw it out, of course. But there are parts of the animal that are literally thrown out. Or made into dog food or something, but it's really unfortunate. We should eat as much as possible. We should eat the whole thing. So yeah, umitoch kach yeh bechol bayis ubayis mikol Yisrael ish chacham v'yodea haTorah. So even if the whole family is not going to Yerushalayim to eat the bechor, the son that he sent to yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and he's going to be the recipient of all the food that has to be in Yerushalayim, he's going to learn a lot in yeshiva. Ashiyalamed b'chachmaso kol beis aviv. So when he comes home for bein hazmanim, so he's going to give his family little shiurim, and is going to tell them, is going to teach them all the laws of the Torah that he learned in yeshiva. So it'll be an informal instruction. You know, you get this image. You know, nowadays we don't have a good image of this. Nowadays, you know, we think of, you know, the parents, if you'll excuse my description, doesn't mean that people with this dress can't be very religious, but you just, you picture, you know, the modern Orthodox light couple, where, you know, the husband in a tiny yarmulke and the wife in, you know, in pants, and then they send the son to Israel, and he comes back, you know, with a huge black hat and a white shirt, and and he's coming, he's telling them all the things they're doing wrong. So that's often not appreciated. It's often not appreciated, but in the olden days, so they appreciated it. It wasn't that people weren't committed to being as firm as possible. It's that they didn't know everything. People weren't as educated. They didn't have the OU sending daily halachas to everyone that everyone can learn all these things with smartphones. Yeah. So they had the representative. He went. They had one kid who went to yeshiva, and he came back, and he taught everyone else the correct way to observe the Torah. Uvechein timoli haaretz de'ayis Hashem. Then the earth shall be filled with knowledge of God. Kiim chacham echad levad yeh be'iro afilu asara. Yuhar be'mi b'nei adam she'bir v'choshiken anoshim v'ayilodim shal yavol lifneim kiim pam achaz b'shana. So let's say, you know, there's a great Torah scholar in the city. So let's say the women, who are normally in those times certainly busy with taking care of the household, and the young children, they wouldn't, you know, they come once a year, you know, to listen maybe to the Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, I don't know, whatever. So they, oh, afilu yishmu divrayam pam b'shavua, yelchu habayish v'yashlichu kol divrei chacham acharei gevam. Even if they go to hear the shir every week, they go, you know, they, nevertheless, they're not really going to internalize it necessarily. It's different when there's a great rabbi in the town and you have to go hear the shiur once in a while. Mm-hmm. It's different when, you know, your son comes home from yeshiva in Yerushalayim. Maybe in, you know, in those days they came to sleep at home every night. They didn't have dormitories. So they came to come to sleep at home on a regular basis, and he's in the house, and he's going to teach them.
Right.
You know, when they're about to do something wrong, you know, the cook is reaching for the Fleischig spoon to stir a milchik soup. You know, stop! No, don't do that. He's going to be there to correct it right away. Tell them what the correct halacha is. So then everyone's going to be more receptive if it's someone living at home. Again, it's a very different culture to what we have nowadays, that often the parents are less receptive when it's, or the family in general, I wouldn't say just the parents, the family in general is less receptive when it's someone within the family telling them to change.
Why they Especially always, their younger brother.
Right, so that's what they always say. If you want to, it might be certain situations appropriate, but ordinarily, you know, go through an intermediate person, you know, the shul family, shul rabbi, if there's really something being done wrong in the house, you know, someone who can who can present a more balanced perspective. And also these people who are learning in yeshiva, it's a problem, because people learning in yeshiva nowadays often don't really understand halacha. They learn, you know, they learn a few snippets of things that, you know, this was my, I had a big issue. I used to go, I went once or twice for entertainment, but there's someone in the Mir Yeshiva who specializes, his shiur basically is, he's a Talmud Chacham, but his shiur specializes in scaring, you know, new American yeshiva bachrim into, you know, freaking out about halachas they never heard of. I didn't take his shiur too seriously, but he goes like, he will tell it, say, you know, you used to do this? Harav El Yoshiv says this is isur gamur, this is completely forbidden. Okay? I mean,
how many people does he keep this way?
A lot. It's a very popular shiur. Really? Very popular shiur. Yeah, very claustrophobic. It meets in the basement in a bomb shelter.
Do they really talk to him like that?
Yeah, they find it, I guess they find it entertaining. Yeah, whatever. So, but they don't really understand what's going on. They're learning in the high school. They've learned Bava Kamma, which I'm not knocking Bava Kamma. You know, it's a great masechta. But you have to have you have to have the connection, the whole history of how the halacha is paskin, as opposed to just learning Bava Kamma and then you learn the Mishnah Berurah on either end. You have to know the whole wide range of things. So yeah, someone was telling me here in the Heights, religious woman. Keeps kosher to the best of my knowledge. So she was saying how her younger sister, she's from out of town, now she lives in the Heights. Her younger sister went to a more Haredi seminary in Israel. And now she's in New York, but she doesn't want to come for Shabbos because she won't eat in her house, in her older sister's house. Yeah. She won't eat in her sister's house because she has only one oven.
Oh, my God. Oh, sorry. That sounds good.
Only one oven.
That's crazy.
Like, well, I couldn't believe it when the, like...
What economic...
Okay, even if you hold lechatchila, you're supposed to have two ovens, that it asters food b'dieved if you don't have two ovens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She believes. She was told you're supposed to have two ovens.
I doubt she was told.
I don't know. She was told that you're supposed to have two ovens, so she said, oh, my sister doesn't have two ovens, so she uses the same oven for milchiks and fleishiks, so I can't eat in her house. That's how they think. They make these deductions. It also,
I remember Rav Schechter used to speak passionately against the Mishnah Berurah for sort of that reason.
Oh.
That now everyone is Mishnah Berurah Judaism, and so that's all they look up. What is the Mishnah Berurah saying? So he constantly said, no, don't tell me what the Mishnah Berurah says. Tell me what the whole story is.
Yeah.
And whoever in the old country had ovens with John.
I mean, the whole setup was different. They didn't have ovens the same way we have ovens. The whole,
who were the sources for this information themselves owned two ovens. I mean,
no, in Israel, a lot of people have two ovens.
Really?
Yeah, or they use the oven only for fleishiks, and they use the
Listen, I know somebody who's very reasonable modern North Africa. She has two dishwashers.
Well,
what do you mean? That's reasonable.
That's a problem. Yeah, I'm wrong.
If you have the resources for it, of course you should.
We got one dishwasher in my house.
All right.
The dishwasher is a complicated issue. I'm not getting into right now. But I also don't think
one dishwasher.
Someone also asked me, by the way, about using the same dishwasher for milchiks and fleishiks. So, because of the various history of how this is paskin, so. Sfardim happened to be more lenient on this in general than Ashkenazim. I'm not going to get into the whole reason right now. So these people who are asking happened to be Sfardi. So I said, yeah, no problem. You know, use the same, or they couldn't kosher it properly for into Ashkenazi standards or something. So I said, no problem. You could use the dishwasher. So they, you know, she was very nervous because she said, you know, I want my Ashkenazi friends to eat in my house. So I said, this does not affect the food after the fact. We're talking about lechatchila, you know, how you should relate to your dishes. Absolutely, 100% okay for Ashkenazim to still eat in your house. It's also
fun. An Ashkenazi eating from a kli that would cook kidneys on Pesach. Or something.
Right. It's even better than that, but in some way. Well, it's about the same. Maybe it's about the same. There's also a story, someone that I know who learned in Staten Island, which is a branch of MTJ, which are Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva. So he said there, Moshe Feinstein's granddaughter was sitting in class in seminary once in Israel. And the teacher was teaching them the halachos of how to deal with milchiks and fleishiks with a sink.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, you know, there are shittas about how to deal with milchiks and fleishiks using one sink for it, but he says, the teacher said, you know, there's so many complications, you know, I really prefer just not to eat in the house of someone who had one sink for both milchiks and fleishiks. So this girl raised her hand, she said, then I'll tell my grandparents not to invite you.
And then they knew who she was.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Anyway, v'yizku l'mashe kosov v'nosati mishkani besochachem, that I shall give my sanctuary within you v'nehaisi v'isem li l'am v'nuchi elochem l'okim, and that you shall be to me a nation and I shall be to you as a God. Okay. Midine ha-mitzvah, what are the rules of Meiser Behema? You shouldn't mix together the cattle and the what we call in Hebrew behema daka. There's behema gasa, a fat animal, and behema daka, a thin animal. Behema gasa means cattle, and behema daka means sheep and goats. So you cannot mix them together; they have to be separate and tithed separately. But then two separate species of thin animal, goats and sheep, may be tithed together. There's no real English word for this.
Yeah, right.
Sheep, we call it stone, we call sheep. But in Hebrew, sometimes the word stone can refer to both sheep and goats. They're considered like one type. And you have to meiser each year separately, the animals that were born each year.
What was the beginning of the year for this purpose?
That's a machlokes tanoim in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, where it talks about the new years. Mm-hmm. that whether it's the first of Elul or the first of Tishrei. So we paskin as the first of Tishrei, the regular Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. But there was a shita that it was that it's the first of Elul.
Wait, why would it be the first of Elul?
Avein masrin min hanolad b'shana zo l'shana acheres k'moshe ein masrin b'zer aretz min hachadash al yoshan, the same way that the produce of each year has to be tied separately v'lo min hayoshan al hachadash, so the same thing shenem arba hayotze asoder shana shana, that you're supposed to take meiser from the produce that comes out of the field year to year. So shana shana, since it's year to year, means that it has to be each year separately. So what happens if b'di'eved, post facto, you put the new ones and the old ones in a corral together and you meiser them together? Because of a Rambam, that appears to the Rambam, and this din does not appear explicitly in the Talmud, but the Rambam thinks shehein meiser, mipnei chumras meiser, that the meiser is effective b'di'eved because meiser is very stringent. Even though lechatchila, ideally, you're supposed to meiser the animals of each year separately, so it doesn't state that explicitly in the Torah. It only says it explicitly in the Torah by produce, shana shana. V'day lanu shenil ma'bimenu lios meiser behema kamol inyin lechatchila velo di'eved. So maybe, so he says it does state explicitly by animals, so b'di'eved, it would work to meiser 2 years together.
Certainly, by the way, for like produce, you can take like 2 years of grain mixed together and do a maser from like collectively, right?
There's no you can't. No, separate years. Yeah.
Okay.
Separate years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not everybody agrees with this because the Rambam, okay, there's no Talmudic source. The Rambam deduced it of his own accord, but it does seem to be generally when it comes to mitzvos hatluyos baaretz and kodshim, so we don't really have masor of how to paskin because this wasn't really. Mm-hmm. Relevant. So generally, we assume, not always, but we assume that in general, the halacha follows the Rambam in terms of these, because he codified everything. You know, in the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't talk much about the mitzvos that were not relevant in those times. It talks even only a tiny bit about mitzvos atluyos baaretz, like Shemitah and Trumas Umaisrish, which were relevant. It talks only a tiny bit, but things that are not explicitly passed in the Shulchan Aruch, we generally follow the Rambam.
How about the Ramah? Did he jump in and
Paskin? No, the Ramah is just commenting on the things in the Shulchan Aruch that...
pertinent for our time.
Look, the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch goes based on the order of the Tur. The Tur was written in 14th century Spain. So there he wrote very little about Shemitah and the Trumas Umaisrus, even though in Eretz Yisrael, yes, it's still relevant, but he didn't live in Eretz Yisrael. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Rabbi Yosef, did live in Eretz Yisrael, so he's somewhat more expansive. He does go through it and discuss the halacha lemaisa, but it's not much. That's why, when the Yishuv HaChodesh, when the new settlement came in Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to, in the late 19th century, when Jews were settling the rest of the land of Israel, not just in Yerushalayim and Tzfas and the traditional cities, so they didn't really know what to do. That's why the Chazon Ish, it took a genius. It took someone who was, totally conversant and courageous and powerful in halacha to reapply all the rules of Trumas Umaisrus and Shemitah and agricultural mitzvos to the new reality in Eretz Yisrael.
Doesn't it apply only when the great majority of Jews live in it?
Midr Abanan, it applies at least when there's not. Mm. But we're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah.
The majority of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael.
They just keep up the intermarriage rate.
V'chein me'inyin ha-mitzvah ma'ashamra zichrona l'vracha she'ein hatloim ha-noladim kimo ha-tevel she'asu lechol m'menu ha-chis aser. It's not like produce. You're not allowed to eat the produce until you tithe it. That's not the case with the animals. You're allowed to use and shecht and whatever you want the animals before you take the meiser.
You mean
it's a positive mitzvah to do it at some point?
Okay, wait.
But you're allowed to eat it before.
You got 10 lambs or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. You decide, okay, I'm going to have one of these for dinner like that. Now you have 9. Now you don't have to take
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Or just practice with. I have.
Yeah, okay, so, all right.
I have 22. I'll take
Then I only have to tie down one.
You can sell and shecht whatever you want. There are certain times of year where you're supposed to ma'aser the animals. Midaraisa, you could do it any time as long as you fulfill the mitzvah. Behem nikroin goren ma'aser behema. That's the technical term for this year. It's like the, how do you say goren in English?
Goren is a threshing floor.
Threshing floor. Oh, good.
Very good.
Threshing floor. So the threshing floor of Meiser Behema, Yasser Osan Hanimtsoim Lo. Then that's when the Chazal decreed that these are the times you're supposed to Meiser the new animals. So Midrabanan, once these times of year happen, then you're not allowed to shecht or sell or anything until you perform the mitzvah. But nevertheless, they didn't apply this rule so stringently that if you violated it and you shechted it before Meiser, then you would not be allowed to use the animal. You are still allowed to use the animal. And it's thrice a year that you have to perform the Meiser. Yom Achron Shel Chodesh Adar, the last day of the month of Adar. V'yom Lamed Hei Misfiras HaOmer, the 35th day of Sfiras HaOmer, which nowadays he could give a date for that, but in the olden days they couldn't necessarily give a date for that because they didn't know which months were going to be 30 days, which were going to be 29 days. Yom Acharon Mechodesh Elul, and the last day of the month of Elul. Belama Kavuz Manim Elu Shem Smuchin Lamo Adam, because the reason is that these are shortly before the festivals. Kadeshu Behemos Mitsuyos Laole Regolim. They want people to be able to purchase animals freely to eat on the festivals when they go to Yerushalayim. Shafal Pisha Mutalim Korkol De Meiser Kemosha Marnun. You could sell before you perform the tithing. Mikomokom Nimnoimayu Milim Korachi Yasro San Kadeshi Yasu Bahen Mitzvah. They had the opposite problem of what you were talking about. Not that they were shechting, they had 10 and they were shechting one to get out of the maestros. They said they didn't want to sell it, their animals, to anyone because they wanted to perform the mitzvah properly.
When did that take place?
In the times of Beis Mikdash.
The first or the second? Because, you know, when you read Yirmiyahu, the terrible things that were going on among the people certainly don't indicate as if...
Okay, let's say the second.
Let's say.
Fine, so they used to... So then, once you perform the mitzvah of meisering, then you're going to you have a weight off your chest, and your animals are now free to be used, because you fulfilled the mitzvah of meisering already, so you're going to be free in selling animals to your fellow revelers. Not revelers, is not the right word.
Celebrants.
To enjoy the festival properly. V'din hamona osam v'tah b'minyano v'kara l'shmini asirio l'shneimazar asiri. What happens if you count wrong? You go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10.
Oh, oops.
What happens? Oh, no, sorry. First case is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10. So what happens? And then you say, or you count 10, and then you say... or you count 10 and then you go and start counting again, you lose count, and it's really the 12th, but you say 10. Shelo niskachu. So it's the count is invalid. It's they are not sanctified as Meiser at all. But if you're off by only one, if the 9th or the 11th you accidentally call 10, niskachu mibnei shem smuchin lasiri. So they were considered to be sanctified. This is our received tradition that you, if you're off by one, so then it counts, but if you're off by more than one, then it doesn't count. There's any doubt as to whether this animal is required to be meisered or not, exempt. So whether everyone, you don't just pick the perfect animals that could be used as a korban and you put them in the corral to be meisered, you put all your animals in the corral, whether they're tamim or balmum. So then, if you're going in the order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, and the 10th one happens to be one, because again, you're not picking, the animals are going of their own accord, and the 10th one happens to be a balmum, you got off the hook.
Wait, balmum, Oh, yeah, right, because they are actually offered as a korban.
Right, okay, part right, of the chaylev and the dam is offered as a korban.
Right,
so if the tenth one happens to be a balbum, a blemished animal, then it right off the bat, it's considered meiser, but it doesn't have sanctity, and you can eat it wherever you want. Mm-hmm. Okay, the only ones that are not included in the corral to be meiser, chutz min hakeloim, that treifa mechusar zman. So if you know off the bat is a treifa, you don't include it. Obviously, it could turn out to be a treifa if you inspect the lungs or something, but if it's known to be a treifa off the bat, then it would not be included. Or if it's kilayim, if it's a crossbreed between different species, or if it's not 8 days old yet. Also, v'chein hayosom shemesa imo shenishchata im leidaso. The mother has to be alive. The mother of this animal has to still be alive. If it's a orphaned animal, then it is not included in the corral for the miceris. Interesting. Also, one thing he doesn't mention here, but
know who is the mother of each animal.
Farmers have a bond with their animals. They know which animals from which. Yeah.
Had a great school. How did grade school teachers remember the names of all the kids in the class? They do.
No, I mean, after all, the farmers would assist in the birth.
Spending a lot of time.
And, right. This is it's not a large industrial process.
That's true.
Also, one thing that's not included in the corral is a C-section, which the Zephyrin doesn't list here explicitly, but again, such an animal is absolutely puzzle from the outset. It's not even shayach to being a proper korban, as opposed to a balmum, which is sort of an extraneous thing that that is imposed on it.
You could eat it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. An animal C-section cannot be a korban.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Udvarim elu mipi hashmua yidanim. That's the tradition. V'yeser proteh v'perik achron min b'choros. The last perik of Maseches B'choros. V'chasu v'rambam zichron v'bracha. Shemitzvah zo no heges v'im b'zicharim unikevos. This applies to both males and females. It is a positive command, but is not at all time-bound. On a deraisa level, you could do it any time. Whenever you have a critical mass of animals that are born, you just mice them. So it applies to both males and females. If you have a female farmer, then she is absolutely obligated to do the Maaser Behema. Bein b'Yisrael and bein b'Kohanim u'Levim. It doesn't matter, again, your tribe. You're required to do the Maaser Behema. Ba'aretz uvachutz la'aretz. It applies, since it's not an agricultural mitzvah, it applies both in the land of Israel and outside. Bein b'fnei abayis, bein shelo b'fnei abayis. It applies both in whether the Beis HaMikdash is standing or whether the Beis HaMikdash is not standing. Uh-oh. That would apply nowadays.
Yeah. So,
if you have a Jewish farmer who has a farm in upstate New York,
right.
I know such a person, and he has some animals. Actually, I don't know if he has cattle and goats or not, but whatever. So, I mean, they're used for milk, not for meat. Whatever it is. But it wouldn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't matter. Once they're born, they still... Okay. So he would have to perform the procedure of Maaser, Zehu Din Torah. That's the biblical law. V'ulam b'gzeira midrabanan kidei shelo yochal shelo b'mum achar she'en lanu mikdash nimtza ba lidei iser gadol shoshochet kodshim b'chutz amru zichron rachash eino noagel b'fnei habayis. So this is one of the instances where the sages instituted a decree of shev al taisa. Do not perform a mitzvah because it's going to lead to problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to not taking the shofar and the lulav on Shabbos because it's going to, maybe you're going to carry it outside. So here too, the Chachamim said that when there's no Beis HaMikdash, nobody should perform the mitzvah of Maaser Behema because you're not going to understand properly when there's a mum and when there's not a mum, a blemish. So you might accidentally have this Maaser, the animal which is imbued with sanctity, and you're going to shecht it. And that is a very, very grievous sin. That is a sanctified animal that's really supposed to be...
It seems like it's outright impossible to do without the Beis HaMikdash. Where are you going to shecht the animal?
No, at a deraisa level. So you're mafrish the miser.
And then you let it
chill out.
Huh. All right.
You're not allowed to shecht it. You'd have to just let it die naturally.
Huh. All right.
Or wait till it develops a mum. And then you're allowed to shecht it outside the Beis HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. But if you shecht...
But if it's got a mum, then it's going to be treif.
No. Mum is not treif.
Oh, sorry.
No, mum is not treif. No. So the not necessarily choice.
Oh, okay,
could be.
Okay.
But so you would have to wait till there's a mum. So then if you have a blemish free consecrated animal hanging around your flock, mm-hmm. and one day you get someone coming to visit, you say, you forget that you have a micered animal there. Mm-hmm. People are not going to notice the red streak on its back, whatever. So you have a guest, and the guest says, "Oh, I'm so hungry," and you look in the fridge. No, we don't have any steak. We're right out of steak. Oh, just go in the back. I know you're a qualified shochet. Go shecht. I have some animals in the back. Pick whichever looks nice and shecht it. And then you hear, and then you're like, oh my gosh, I forgot to tell him. Which one did he do? And lo and behold, you go outside and he shechted the one with the red stripe on his back. And you said, oh my gosh, you just did a terrible sin of shechting a consecrated animal. Outside the Beis HaMikdash. So to avoid such a possibility, the Chachamim said that nowadays, when there's no Beis HaMikdash, we should not perform the mitzvah Ma'aser Behema at all. But would there be a Beis HaMikdash, then it would be applicable even outside the land of Israel. You would have to, even if you would have in New York, an animal, and you miser them every year, you would have to take a tenth of your animals to the Beis HaMikdash. Take them on the plane, buy two seats on the plane, sit your little calf next to you or your little lamb next to you on the plane, and go to Eretz Yisrael, and you would have to go to the Beis HaMikdash.
Holy cow!
I'd rather have one of them than some little babies and so on the plane, actually. But next to me,
Is there any chiyuv for a shochet before he shechts an animal to ascertain whether the animal is roi to be shechted?
Yes.
A good question.
There is. You're supposed to, whatever you can tell from the outside, you're supposed to tell before you shecht it, sure.
Like a broken leg or something like that,
Right, so a broken leg is not necessarily a problem, but whatever you can tell, whether the animal is going to be kosher or not, then you have to ascertain before you shecht. I mean, you don't have to, which is why I waste the animal. I mean, it could be a bracha levatala. You shouldn't, in terms of if you have a reason to suspect that it's not going to be kosher, so you shouldn't make the bracha on the shechita. Absolutely.
What I'm asking is if the shochet has a chiyuv to ascertain facts clearly before he actually shechts.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have to do an MRI to check the sirchis, in advance. But whatever is possible to ascertain. That's why Mrs. Hirsch's makbit to eat only chickens that were walked around the block before they're shechted in order to ascertain properly that she's not, as far as I know, she's not really makbit.
Broken leg is not...
Not necessarily, but the idea is that if the chickens are so ill that they can't even walk, I've never heard around the block, but a few steps. So that's why in some shechitas they do walk the chickens a little bit before they shecht them, in order to make sure that that they're healthy enough that it's unlikely that they're going to have internal signs of trypheus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's why chickens nowadays are bred to grow so fast, so big so fast that they can't walk. They're their hearts can't keep up with their bodies. It's not so bullshit. I mean, for food production, it's good, but it does create some kashrus complications. Their torn tendons in the leg is a trefa, so they get more likely to have a torn leg tendon. Yeah, I can hook you up if you want. There are people who raise heritage breed chickens, meaning chickens that only reproduce naturally and were never bred for these particular characteristics. Now the same, direct copy of a chicken that people had.
My sister does that actually.
She has heritage. Okay.
Yeah, heritage ducks and actually, the trouble is, of course, is the geese and that the of course is that they not only are very expensive, but the amount of meat on them is tiny compared to what we're used to.
So they're more expensive. Mm-hmm.
So in the end,
I heard the chicken once, I believe. Yeah. And it wasn't so different. I mean, a little smaller, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was a big heritage chicken. I don't know. But okay, so you could, if you want heritage animals, it's very possible to obtain. Ad kan l'shono. That's the end of the Rambam. Ve'od kasa b'makom acher. The Rambam also wrote, Shim avar v'iser bizman hazeh, harei ze meiser. But if you violated this rabbinical decree and you did tithe your animals, so it works. you know, the animal will become a tithed animal, have holiness. Ve'yachel b'mumo b'chol makom. You have to wait till it develops a blemish in order to eat it. Kiu kechulin gemurim. So once it develops a blemish, it's completely deconsecrated. Ve'atomim anechal b'Yerushalayim b'zman habayis. So if there was a blemish-free one, which was eaten in Yerushalayim at the times of the Beis Hamikdash, dino she'yachel abaylim kulo kapesach. So the entire animal is eaten by the owners. The innards and the fat and the blood, which is offered on the altar, so in other words, the kohanim have no portion in it. In certain korbanos, the owners get some of it, and the kohanim get others of it. So here, the kohanim get nothing, and some is offered on the altar, the blood and fat, and most of the animal, 95% of the animal, is eaten by the owners.
In order to consecrate, you have to go through the whole business of, you know, the calves in the corral or whatever it was,
right.
And little door, and the mother's outside, and they sit there with your staff and the red marker. You know,
well, the red marker is not makiv.
Okay,
the red marker is right. If they will go out of their own accord, and you would just count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Which one it is? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Uh-huh. But, so it's unlikely that this happened by accident, choice, you know.
Right.
So, you can't simply say, I think you're going to be, master. No, it's like, okay, got it.
Right, because if you go, like I said, if you go into your corral and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, meiser, it does nothing. The animal specifically has to walk of its own accord and pass
like
in front of you.
Slow.